might mention, I know you're aware of this, Mr. Chairman, the Monday following my last testimony on calling the Secretary of State's office in Washington, they have introduced a bill which has a short title, the State Seal Act of 1983. They found their current law, which is the printed bill that you have before you, to be unworkable. The reason they are rewriting their law, quite frankly, is their centennial is next year, and they intend to charge people for using this on ashtrays and mugs and anything else. It's, Washington is obviously in the same financial condition we're in. So I've taken some of the words from the Washington law. It was written by the Office of the Attorney General. I've talked with Laura Eckert, who is the Assistant Attorney General that wrote that, about some of the other provisions. I've used very limited portions of it. I don't want to get into franchising or granting certificates of need, which they do, and certificates of franchise. Section 2 deals with prohibitions of the state seal in any form, and that would be whether it would be a die-cast version or merely a printed version. Paragraph A would prohibit its use in any form which suggests official or state endorsement of any commercial product, business, service, or other activity which is not by the state itself, not a state activity. At the previous hearing, I think I had distributed a Sperry Univac invitation. Since then, in our audit of the State Department of Higher Education, there's been some news coverage as on courses offered through the School of Business there that were put on by a private foundation. The brochures that were sent out indicated it was an official function. Indeed, the state seal was used on that. That's, I suppose, another example. I admit this is a very subjective section, and I'll speak to that later, but it's similar to language in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. So since we're changing now to a civil penalty sections as opposed to criminal penalties, I'm not so bothered by that language. Paragraph B would prohibit the use of the state seal in connection with the nomination or election of any candidate or the approval or rejection of any measure. We could pull definitions for those terms if this committee wants to prohibit that activity from 260.005, which is the corrupt practices chapter. There are certain election documents that the Secretary of State produces that require the seal to be on the voter's pamphlet, for example. So if necessary, I would make adjustments for those kinds of uses where the state seal is either required or desired. I don't know that it's necessary where there's a specific statute that says the cover of the voter's pamphlet shall have the seal on it. Paragraph 3 bothered me, I think, probably the most because of First Amendment and 14th Amendment problems. In talking with Ms. Eckert, they took this language apparently from federal law, which speaks to what can and cannot be done with the United States flag, and they are confident, at least the Washington Attorney General is confident, that it is not unconstitutional. This would get at the use that I'm sure you're all aware of on using the state seal, for example, on prophylactics. We've changed the concept to get away from a criminal, and we do not have vending machines in our office. I probably had 20 calls.
You didn't bring any of that with you, I hope.
20 calls, yes. No one will leave their name.
What do you mean, as you presume we're all aware of?
Section 3 is a shift away from Class A misdemeanor treatment for a violation of the Act. It would merely impose a civil penalty of $250, which is consistent with a violation, and grant a right of contested case hearing, very similar to that provided for in election matters on late filings or in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. I think Section 4 is perhaps more important, and that is to, our main goal is to stop these activities, and that would authorize the Secretary of State to, through the Attorney General, obviously, to seek appropriate action to enjoin any violations of the Act. I might add the Washington Act covers other areas I didn't feel were all that burning or necessary. The only one I found interesting is that the state seal's use would be prohibited in any lobbying activity or an attempt to influence any state employee or public official in the performance of his or her duties. We've not experienced any difficulty, and I don't know why that was written into the Washington law.
Thank you, Mr. Alberto, for your efforts to address the concerns of some of the subcommittee, at least as far as the bill in its original form. I think this is certainly an improvement. If there's no objection to the subcommittee, I will ask staff to arrange legislative council's preparation of these as formal amendments, and we will take them up in closer scrutiny in that setting, if that's agreeable to everyone. And we will, of course, look forward to another visit from you in which we can dialogue about this problem.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for your patience, and to the staff, too.
Ms. Thurston, I have the statement from you, which I'm going through now to ascertain. Let me explain the problem. As I close the hearing on that bill, I would be happy to reopen it, but I would like to take the people who've been waiting on another bill first. Can you stay around for a few minutes? We'll take 2458, and I have three witnesses signed together: Pat Gillis, Jim Mazie of Ozzie, and Earl Hempstead. Would you like to come up here?
Pat Gillis, an assistant to Houseman earlier, Larry Campbell, and I'm here on his behalf. House Bill 2458 is a good, simple bill that would change the year that possession of a slot machine so that it does not constitute a criminal offense from the year 1941 to the year 1958. What this bill intends to do is to expand the antique market and make slot machines manufactured before 1958 collector's items. The year 1941 was originally adopted by the state of California as a standard year, but that was 42 years ago, and an update is sorely needed. The year 1958 is adopted in this bill because that would make machines now 25 years or older antiques. Currently, 27 out of 48 states do not constitute a criminal offense for machines more than 25 years of age. In Oregon, the present law is too restrictive now, especially for machines more than 25 years of age that are now considered, quote, gambling, unquote, devices. This bill is no way intended to promote or extend rights of gambling. It is intended to provide those people who have collected or are intending to collect slot machines as amusement devices or for antique purposes. Now, on my left is Mr. Jim Vasey, and he's traveled from Elkton here today, and on my right is Mr. Earl Hempstead, who's come from North Bend. And it was kind of on their prompting that the bill was initiated, and they can answer some specific questions for you. And they also have some books here that we cannot reproduce, but they have pictures on specific machines that we're talking about for the bill for your questions that they can show you here today.
Was the year 1958, I may have missed this, was that selected because there was a change in styles and models at that point, or are you more or less arbitrarily picking a year to update to because of how far we've come since 1941?
No, the original the original intent was to draft a bill that would make machines 25 years of age or older legal. Therefore, a bill that wouldn't have to be updated ever again. In the drafting, we got a little confused and put 58 in instead of, and that's how 58 came to be, which is a perfectly acceptable to us. You know, there might be a time later when we might want to come back as more machines become obsolete and unusable by the industries and become collector's items.
Is the year of manufacture shown on each machine?
No, that's part of our problem. 58 covers virtually all the mechanicals, and that's what we're trying to include. Want to include is all the mechanical machines.
From the electric. The electrics, which you have in Las Vegas, Reno, mechanical, you're just your pull-down style machine.
Maybe I'm not sure of understanding. Does the machine, is there a way to tell where the machine was or was not manufactured before 1958 by just looking, I mean, is there a...
By the serial number prior to the machine, or... Some machines were made over a long period of time, and they're made up of many different old parts and new parts.
Gentlemen, I have some pictures with the dates.
Confusing them more than...
Right here. They're considered antiques now also, but they're not legal in the state of Oregon. They're just manual machines, and the dates are on the bottom there. Now, there's other pictures there, and it goes up to a little higher years.
Was it your intention that the bill actually refer to a 25-year age rather than a specific year?
Well, that was my intention originally, and in my communications with Mr. Campbell, I wasn't specific enough, I guess, and he came up with this 1958 year, which is perfectly acceptable to me.
Questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hill.
Do you have any approximate idea of how many machines we're talking about?
Just for the state or for...
Well, I of course, the thing we're concerned about is having machines that could be used for illegal gambling. Mm-hmm. And if there are large numbers of machines of this type that are available, it would seem to maybe lend itself to that. Well, I mean, machines that are this old.
No, we in no way intend to promote gambling.
Oh, I know you don't. I don't believe that you would, but I'm...
No, the mechanical machines are virtually obsolete as far as gambling with them is concerned. You might want one for your living room to play with or something of that nature. Mechanical machines just are a thing of the past. It's like old automobiles, you might say. The state allows a classification for antique or collector's automobiles, even licenses them that way. They're not really practical for everyday use, but they're sure a lot of fun to play with.
Are they like cars in that they are usually disposed of, or when they become obsolete, or do they just tend to be kept?
Oh boy, I don't...
They're usually, when you find a machine, usually it's usually in poor shape. It's the paint is off in it, the chrome is off in it, it doesn't work right, and we as collectors take those machines and work them over, repaint them, paint them, re-chrome them, and make them basically like you see right there in the pictures. It's hard to find unless one of these slot machines has been redone. It's in poor shape, mechanically and looks.
Example possibly the rarity. I've been collecting those machines over 25 years, and I have less than 30 machines. You know, they're just not available. Once in a while, you'll find one in a chicken house or in a barn or garage or basement or something, but they're not. It's not the kind of thing you just run out and put an order in for 40 machines. You just can't do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative, I guess I'm still a little bit unclear as to this date. Is the date of significance or not, the 1958, or is it
the... Right, the 25 years now, 83.
Well, what happens next year?
That's where the discrepancy comes in, because now... possibly could be amended to say, well, not 58, but machines at 25 years or older. So 84 would be 59, 85, 1960.
Do we worry about coming into the era then of the electronic game, I guess, sometime in the future if we...
The average life of electronic machines is 7 years. They'll be far obsolete long before a 25-year period. They're not as dependable, actually. It's an older mechanical machine. Or the life expectancy is far less, I should say.
Okay, thank you.
But I'm going to be quiet.
No, go ahead.
Well, I think one thing I was trying to explain, and I wasn't clear, is that many, many of the old machines, especially machines designed before the war and used after the war, were constantly updated or repaired. So we have a great number of machines that are very collectible, but there's no way for us to determine or put an age on them now. Some of the parts were made before the war, some of the parts were made after the war. Any prosecutor that's trying to enforce that law is going to have a very difficult time proving, you know, it's an old machine or a new machine. The collector in the same idea would have a very difficult time. By bringing this up to 58, we know that they were all made before that. So it would clarify, it would just straighten that whole thing out.
Mr. Gillis or gentlemen, any idea the last time somebody, if ever, was prosecuted for this offense?
In this state, I don't know. I can't remember when anybody was prosecuted for possession. Now, it's not uncommon for people to be prosecuted for gambling.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
I'd like to find out if the district attorneys have any comment on this bill. Check with them.
I just came across one, though, that is like a 1960 Mills Bell-O-Matic Silver Palace drawbridge.
Is there an order for it?
I don't know. That's just that's just 1960. It's 2 years off from.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was the 50th.
There's also a 1978. Valley M 1090-1
3-coin multiplier. That's illustrated in that book for the fact that five states do allow any machines, possession of a machine manufactured in any year, providing it was not used for gambling. Possession is not a crime in five states.
If it's not being used for gambling. That's when, because they do make the modern day ones.
Representative, to your knowledge, are any machines that are 25 years old or older used for gambling? I know you say that most of them are electronic now, but are there any establishments that you were familiar with?
There's none in this state that I'm familiar with. Occasionally, you might see one in an old club in Nevada. You know, where it was an obsolete machine, that the whole business might be obsolete.
I have seen rows of old machines, like just one row, and then it tells about it on display, and sometimes some of them you can put money in, but they're the antique machines. You know, they
probably don't pay very generously.
Yeah, all you can get is put it in.
That's right. Cobwebs all over the world. Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate your time and trouble for coming in. Orville Downey.
Mr. Chairman.
You state your name for the
Orville Downey, Portland, Oregon. And as far as, you know, the antique machines, I've been collecting them now for about, I'd say 5 years. And I have a total of 15. I've got them, I repaint them, I restore them, I work on them. And the mechanisms in them, when you speak of your mechanical type, there's most all your mechanism, if it's a Mills or a Watling or a Pace, they will all interchange. And you run into that area right there at 41 and the date that they're asking to try to be changed. Where about the only difference in a lot of the machines is the fronts maybe will have a diamond, maybe you've seen in those pictures, and some of them will have a cluster of cherries And the only difference is in them is those ornaments on there. And so they're really, I think they should be classed as antiques. And I'd sure like to have a couple of them if they were legal in my collection. Really. Yeah, I really would. So if there's any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've done the hearing.
I happen to be in Salem today because of another little chore, and my son, knowing that I was going to be down here, asked me to appear at this hearing. Now, he collects slot machines, and he has a few that are very old, and he, like the rest of these people here today, would like very much to have some in his collection that are a little bit later than what he has. And it's not a matter of buying and selling these as profit. It's just because it's the joy of owning them. As one gentleman stated, like an antique car, they get hooked on them. And they just like to own them. And it's his pride and joy to show them off, you know, that how he has restored them. And he spent quite a bit of money in restoring them and buying parts to restore some of the older ones that he has. So he asked me to come down here today to appear on his behalf anyway to promote the passage of this bill to legalize the machines.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Questions? Before we adjourn, this is Warren Parson.
I did not sign it.
Well, the subcommittee's information, this is back on 25.
Back to 25. I'm a partner in the organization Surrogate Adoptions. And what we wanted to find out today was, we're concerned with legal qualifications and possible licenses for functioning as a referral agency. At this time, we're representing 12 women who want to be surrogate mothers, and we're representing 5 couples who are interested in surrogate mothers. And we want to know how we stand within, as far as the law is concerned.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, but as I gather it, the House Bill
2693
is going to address that question.
There was something in 2525 that referred to it. The charging of reasonable fees by children's services or authorized adoption agencies, other state agencies, or attorneys associated with. And as an agency that does not offer any legal services, which would classify us not as an attorney situation, but we're just concerned with whether or not we fit into any of those categories. What we're offering specifically, the services we're offering, are support services and referral between surrogate mothers and adoptive couples. And the support services continue throughout the term of pregnancy as counseling. Does this not apply in this case?
I think because of the language in subsection C dealing with the performance of a contract under which a woman agrees to be inseminated by someone not her spouse and bear that child, I think probably the entire arrangement, including the involvement of the agency, which is involved in identifying, in bringing about that relationship, is probably intended to be included. But I appreciate your taking the time to wait and bring up this question, because it may well be that this bill will need to be further clarified so that some so obviously a normal incident of the total relationship between the surrogate mother and the other family will not be made criminal inadvertently.
Yes, we were concerned with that point.
What I think we're going to try to do is probably
excuse me,
await the arrival of House Bill 2693 in this committee and then resume the consideration of 2525 in light of that bill.
You feel that they will be seen as
and we will develop them together.
Yes, develop them. Thank you.
Okay. And I would hope you could return at that point.
Yes.
To assist us with particularly the provisions of the other bill. Thank you. Anything more for the subcommittee? Okay, we will then be adjourned until 1:30. I'm sorry, were you going to this? I thought I had everybody who was signed up. We will then be adjourned until 1:30 Monday.